TNT Radio wants you to get on our soapbox because your opinion matters. Tell us what you really think at tntradio.live. Upload a video, some audio, or drop us a note on TNT Radio's soapbox. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. Perspective with Jesse Zurawell on today's news talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Perspective. I'm Jesse Zurawell, your host for the hour. Debbie Evans is back with me today. Debbie is a retired NHS nurse, a former advisor to the UK's Department of Health, and she is currently nursing correspondent at UK Column News. Debbie, how are you?
Jesse, hello. Lovely to be with you. I'm well. Even more disunited than we were. I mean, can we even get any more disunited? I mean, what's going on in the UK? Well, to anybody that wants to know, the government, again, is in collapse. We've had politicians being sacked. We've got other ones under investigation. It's all a bit carnage. And now we've got an NHS emergency plan coming in, which is, I'm so cross about it, actually, because our health secretary stands up and says, oh, you know, the NHS is collapsing, but guess what? We're going to be the cavalry and we're going to do this and that and the other. And it's not an emergency plan at all. What we're finding out is that this was planned years ago, and it's called something called the NHS long-term plan. And they're coming out with all this, we're going to provide more ambulances, we're going to provide more beds. This was all planned ages ago, and yet they're throwing it out as an emergency plan. So we're seeing people jumping ship. I've gotten to the point now, Jesse, where I'm just really angry with all of the globalists. I mean, I was anyway, but I'm even more angry with them now, and the governments and everybody who's involved in this wicked plan, for thinking that we are too stupid to suss it out, because we're not. And that's what they're banking on, you know, that we're stupid, that we're not savvy, that we can't research, that we're not able to join dots, that we can't find out their plan, that they can get away with this. And we're not stupid, and none of your listeners are stupid, otherwise they wouldn't be listening to TNT. And same goes for all the viewers and listeners of alternative media out there all over the world. You know, we know this. We're not stupid. We see it. And there's so many more of us than them, which gives me great hope, because as time goes on, I see more and more people starting to become aware of what is going on. And, you know, specifically, it's not my area at all, but, you know, with regards to the war, it seems that every single country in the West appears to be funding Ukraine's war, and also firing it up and driving it, whereas peace talks should be going on, and people should be just stopping for a minute and talking and sitting around a table, because so many lives, Russian lives, Ukrainian lives, everywhere all over the globe are being lost. So we find ourselves in the West throwing money at President Zelensky, only to find out that should we get attacked, and I know for sure in the UK it's so, if we get attacked, actually we don't have an effective army or armed services to be able to protect us. Least of all, they've got the arms with which to use, because we've given them all and more to Ukraine. So I don't see things getting any better anytime soon. However, I am constantly buoyed up by the things that people are doing out there on their own, you know, even the littlest things making such a huge impact. So I definitely think that numbers on our side are growing. Sorry, that was a bit of a long introduction, really, wasn't it, to what's going on in the UK?
No, it was very good. Well, you'll be happy to know that in terms of emergencies, according to AP and every other corporate media outlet, President Joe Biden informed Congress on Monday that he will end the twin national emergencies for addressing COVID-19 on May 11 as most of the world has returned closer to normalcy nearly 3 years after they were first declared. I get hung up on that clause, most of the world has returned closer to normalcy. What does that mean? Returned closer to normalcy? What is normalcy?
What is normalcy? I think we've all forgotten it. I mean, what does that mean?
I think it means silence. That. Yeah. I think it means that whatever Biden or whoever is handling him decides to declare on the 11th of May, whether that's an official end to these emergencies that never were, or some other announcement, it means that the COVID-19 operation is going to continue, and it is the new normal, to use the globalists' language. And I think this is a reflection of how poorly a lot of corporate journalists are at writing, at stringing a basic sentence together.
No, they can't. So, and you know, that takes me back to emergencies. You know, they say they're going to call down the emergency, step down the emergency. But we got to remember that the WEF have just announced that we're all heading for polycrisis era, which is actually worse than an emergency. It's loads of different catastrophic events happening all at the same time. So, you know, it's fine for Joe Biden to say that, and it's fine for everyone to say, oh, you know, the emergency is kind of over. But actually, they're doing something in one breath, and then in the other breath, they're saying, hey, but you know what? You've got plenty more catastrophes to come, and they're going to come thick and fast. So the word emergency now, I think, has become normal.
There's no mention in this article or other coverage of the end of these, quote, twin national emergencies, unquote, about the monkeypox emergency, which is still in place. That's still a national emergency here in the U.S. And as far as I know, it's still a global emergency, according to the WHO. So evidently, that's going to remain on the books. You know?
Yeah, right. And bird flu. People have forgotten about bird flu. I mean, the birds here have been locked up. They've been in their own effective lockdown since before Christmas. And I just saw the news today to say that avian flu has now jumped into mammals. And I think they were mentioning foxes and otters. So already, you know, something that was on the radar has suddenly slipped off, as with monkeypox, as with strep A, as with RSV. These things are still ongoing, but they've just slipped gently off the radar. It's almost as though they're trying to distract us.
Almost at the same time this news came out, Tedros was at his globalist podium saying COVID-19 remains a major global threat, essentially the pandemic, pseudo-pandemic, is not over. So conflicting messages, I don't know if that's intentional or not, but again, I think whatever we can say the COVID-19 operation is now, and it's a lot of things, it's going to continue and it's going to mutate into new forms. The operation is going to mutate. The non-existent virus, we'll be told, is going to continue to mutate, but that's not anything we should be worried about. We should be worried about what this psyop is going to be used for against us, against humanity. And it's anyone's guess at this point nothing is beyond these people. And getting back to what you were saying a few minutes ago, I think they know a lot of us have homed in on their plans in as much as we can, and they don't care if we know. They probably think we're stupid as well. Whatever it is, if it's one or the other or a combination of the two, they don't care that we know, and they're pressing ahead full steam. Because what other choice do they have at this point? They're so invested in it. And it hasn't been just for the last 3 years. This has been decades, arguably even a century or more in the making. They're not going to stop now.
No, and then they can't. I mean, because COVID has to continue. COVID was the catalyst to all of this. And if they were to admit now or to stop any talk of COVID and as though it had never happened, then they'd be called out by everybody. So they can't risk that. So they have to continue this Trojan horse for as far as they possibly can. And, you know, talking about the World Health Organization and Tedros, but, you know, they've already started their latest fear drive. So they turn around in 1 minute and say, you know, stand down from COVID or whatever. And, you know, it's not as urgent as it was, even though it's going to carry on. And then the next fear drive has become, because on the, I think it was late January, around the 27th of January, that they published an update of their medicines, and they're stockpiling nuclear and radiological medicines for emergencies. And they're urging other countries to stockpile as well. You know, this is just another, if anybody wants to find the document, it's called the National Stockpiles for Radiological and Nuclear Emergencies Policy Advice. And it's published on the WHO website on the 27th of January. But, you know, this is clearly in preparedness for what is to come. So stand down off one, and then stand up on another. We'll just promote the fear, because at the end of the day, it's the fear and the cascade of information that accompanies the fear that causes all the problems. And I think that's my biggest worry, in that they're now pressing all of these other buttons in the hope to make us frightened, to make us anxious, to drive us again to the health service because we can't sleep, because we're depressed, because we're struggling to, you know, to think and to cognitively operate. So, you know, it does worry me that they're carrying on to pushing this fear drive again. And we're seeing it all over the world. I mean, you know, all of the member states of the WHO are being told to act in lockstep. Who knows what's mm-hmm. coming down the line pretty soon, but we've got a good gauge from Bill Gates's catastrophic contagion, catastrophic, you know, here we go again, the word catastrophe. So there's clearly more to come. And I think we need to sort of stand back and say, right, well, we know it's coming. You know, this is part of their game. This is part of the aim of the game. And again, we have to say, look, you know, don't be frightened. Just be prepared for it. And when it comes, no one then has a shock. And if you're not in shock, generally, you're not frightened. So I think there's a lot more to come.
Mm-hmm. I spoke with James Roguski on Tuesday about the WHO's continued designs for humanity, specifically through amendments to the international health regulations. And the most recent amendments were proposed and submitted by the kingdom, actually. It's the last absolute monarchy in Africa, the African kingdom of Eswatini, formerly Swaziland. And Eswatini submitted a number of proposed amendments. They were chosen to do so somehow. And these proposed amendments essentially firm up the amendments that were proposed back in December, which included the crossing out of any concern about human dignity and human sovereignty. So this seems to have been, among other things, a signal from via Eswatini that Africa is going to be in the crosshairs of the WHO. And I think a big part of the reason for that is that Africa, by and large, didn't go along with the COVID-19 operation in terms of lockdowns, in terms of injections. And if you look at Africa's overall numbers with regard to so-called cases of COVID-19 and so-called deaths as a result of COVID-19 and injection uptake, all of those numbers are very low and give the lie to the COVID-19 operation, and I would say to virology more broadly. And it seems that Africa is going to be punished for that, and a likely mechanism for targeting Africa, a likely primary mechanism, is going to be the One Health agenda, which you and I have talked about a number of times. And when one goes to the Lancet, it's easy to find out that at the end of January, the Lancet published a series on One Health and global health security, which includes 4 articles and 1 comment piece. But in the executive summary for the series, it reads in part, following the 2014-2016 Ebola outbreak in West Africa and the ongoing global COVID-19 pandemic, the One Health approach, bridging the animal, environmental, human health interface, has rapidly gained political and financial support, particularly in regional and transcontinental initiatives to improve global health security. The G, the H, the S, and global health security are all capitalized, including through recently established institutions like Africa CDC and other multidisciplinary consortia. It also reads in part that we should be worried about potential environmental and chemical hazards, which speaks to what you just mentioned with regard to the WHO updating its list of critical medicines for radiation and nuclear emergencies, as the WHO puts it. So, and then adding to what the Lancet has recently published, if you look at the papers in the series, there are a lot of authors from Africa. There are authors who are part of the One Health high level expert panel, a very concerning panel if you look at the people on there and their histories and their affiliations. And the comment piece, in addition to these 4 papers in the series, is titled, sorry, not the comment piece. The 4th piece in the series is titled Global and Regional Governance of One Health and Implications for Global Health Security. So global governance is right there in the title. And this is something that Mark Anderson has been keyed in on UK Column, as well, and he's highlighted portions of the comment paper titled One Health Action for Health Security and Equity, which states in one part, and I'm paraphrasing from his reporting, but it states that humans, animals, other animals, plant life should all be considered equal. There should be no hierarchy, no food chain. Everything should be level. And that's a very disturbing, a very concerning statement. And even more so when you think about that as the guiding principle of this One Health mechanism, which, as I said, I think is going to be used to target Africa specifically, maybe primarily, but also the rest of the world.
Yeah, and just to throw a little bit more light on that, and I completely agree. And, you know, when you bring it into plants and every leaf and every single organism on the planet is currently being mapped, genomically mapped. They want to be able to track and trace everything of everything, every single species. And since when did we ever put health and security together? You know, it's two completely different subjects, and yet we seem to have fused them together. But going back to Africa, I think it's interesting to note that even the WHO, they say it themselves that 80% of the world population depends on herbal medicine. And it was a statistic that I wasn't aware of. And I've recently interviewed an amazing medical herbal medicine practitioner. And I was asking her about, because it's a whole new world to me. I'm used to the allopathic world. Not that I want to go back to the allopathic world. I think I'm a born again herbie, but apparently 4 billion people. Yes, sorry.
Can I ask who you interviewed?
I interviewed a wonderful, she's very shy. Her name's Jane Placker, and her interview will be out very, very soon, because what she was explaining to me was that, you know, like in the allopathic world, how many people are aware of the agenda? How many people are awake? And you would think that everybody within the alternative medicine world, especially herbal medicine practitioners and Chinese medicine practitioners, would all be conscious of the agenda. However, they're not. In the UK, where we've got a population of 67 million, or did have in 2017, we've only got about 2,000 medical herbal medical practitioners. So it's a tiny, tiny proportion, and there's no way really to train them. You know, it's very, very far and few between the courses, and they have to fund them for themselves. And of course, if you think about Africa and Asia, primarily they use herbal medicine, and they are very skeptical and suspicious of Western medicine, which is what we call allopathic medicine. And many of the, I mean, in Africa, for example, I mean, you know, you've got the rainforest, you've got absolutely, you know, millions of different plants and herbs. And they say that, you know, in Africa, they say they, thanks very much indeed, but, you know, they work very well. And we don't need your vaccines. We don't need your allopathic medicine. We don't trust it. So, you know, fortunately for them, they are aware of the dangers of Western medicine. So I think it's interesting that, you know, Africa's being targeted, because we all know that Bill Gates isn't the most, and I keep saying this about Bill Gates, because we know how we feel about Bill Gates and what he professes to be and quite clearly isn't. But many people in the Western world still think that Bill Gates is some angel, some hero, somebody to come and save the world's population. But many in Africa and Asia know differently, of course. So the fact that they want to target Africa when they already know that 80% of the world's population relies on herbal medicine, I think is an interesting observation. Because at the end of the day, doctors, allopathic doctors, they don't deal in health. You know, this is the, somebody said this to me the other day, and it kind of was like a light bulb moment. They said, doctors don't deal in health. They deal in disease, diagnosis, death. They don't deal in health. And I thought, no, they actually don't. So we all go running to the white coat doctors to find out how healthy we can be, when actually these doctors are only practicing in disease and experts in disease. So I think it turns the whole conversation around. But I'm going to be speaking to James Roguski in the next couple of weeks. And it was actually quite a coincidence that I happened to see the Royal Society of Medicine in the UK. They put out regular YouTubes. They've got their own channel, the Royal Society of Medicine. And they've just put out an interview with regards to the WHO pandemic treaty and the international health regulations and how they would affect the UK. So if anybody wants, and I'm sure in your own organisations, whatever your own organisations are in your own countries, if you page that organisation into YouTube, you're more than likely see people talking about how it will impact you in your country. And certainly there was a very lengthy interview only about 4 days ago, not many views on this one. So it's always good to look at the organizations and see what they're saying, because very few people view these YouTubes, and yet there are some priceless gems of information in them. So I think things are hotting up with the WHO. I'm starting to see more people talking about the international health regulations and the changes, and more people being very suspicious of the WHO. You know, what are they doing behind closed doors? We don't trust them. And they know we don't trust them. And they're going to every length they possibly can to address that, on how can we get the public to trust us more. Has there been, is there a lethargy, a fatigue in vaccinations? Yes, I think so. So they are very aware of the mistrust in WHO, but I think it's all eyes on them now, because, I mean, I don't know about anybody listening, but I certainly don't trust them as far as I can throw them.
No, I don't either. I think the WHO should be dissolved and done away with permanently. But speaking of non-allopathic medicine, I was very interested to find, through the Chinese government's foreign ministry website, a diagnosis and treatment protocol for novel coronavirus pneumonia, trial version 7. This seems to be the last version that was published on March 3rd of 2020. It has a diagnosis and treatment protocol that is completely allopathic, and the one that's been followed since 2020 with regard to the COVID-19 operation. But there's an entire protocol, treatment protocol in here, that's based on traditional Chinese medicine that seems to have never been used, but it's detailed meticulously in this 17-page report, I suppose you could call it. And this report was released by China's National Health Commission and also its State Administration of Traditional Chinese Medicine, again on March 3rd, 2020. I don't know how effective those treatments were for, let's say, pneumonia, because pneumonia was happening, continues to happen. It's a real illness. It's not a viral illness, but it is an illness nonetheless. I don't know how effective these traditional Chinese medicine treatments are or have been or were, if they're even used anymore. But I find it very interesting that this was outlined in such detail, and then it seems just completely pushed to the side, and the allopathic model was taken up on a global scale. And we know what that so-called diagnosis and treatment protocol has resulted in. It's resulted in mass harm and death that has nothing to do at all with a so-called virus and the disease this so-called virus allegedly causes. So I just wanted to point that out, since we were speaking in the arena of herbal medicine.
Yeah, and I think it's very interesting too, Jesse. I've learned, so it's a whole new world to me, the world of herbal medicine. But I'm finding that more and more people are feeling that they're trapped in the allopathic medical world. They've gone to a doctor, and as soon as the doctor gives them a diagnosis, the doctor feels empowered to start treating them, whether or not that patient wants the treatment or not. They're offered mainly allopathic medicines. And what concerns me more is children, because if you have a sick child, and it could be a life-limiting, a life-debilitating, or even life-ending illness, the minute that child is diagnosed, they're automatically within that Western allopathic medical world. And if the parents don't want that child to have allopathic medicine, or maybe what they consider to be highly toxic medicine, for example, sodium valproate, if they don't want that, there is no choice. They're locked in, they're trapped into this Western way of medicine. Because if they start suggesting that they want to go down the alternative route, or they want to consult a herbal practitioner, then they're seen as, well, you're not doing what's in the best interests of your child. We are saying that this
that's
is
not
what
in the
is
protocol.
Needed. Yeah, absolutely. And of course, you know, I think,
and this is where the problem of so-called, sorry to interrupt, just
yeah,
quickly,
I wanted
to say, this is where the very problematic model of so-called evidence-based medicine comes in, and the protocols it produces. And I'll have to send you this, but there's a very good presentation that Dr. Kevin Corbett, who's based in the UK, gave to medical doctors for COVID ethics not too long ago. And he talked at length about how the NHS was turned from what it was into what it is today. And he worked for many years in the NHS as a nurse, and specifically spent a lot of time working with patients who were diagnosed with HIV and AIDS. And he saw firsthand and learned firsthand the fraud that was, and saw people being killed by protocols derived from this evidence-based medicine model. And he talks about how that has led in large part to the destruction of the NHS in terms of actually treating and helping patients. I'll send that to you. I think you'll find it fascinating. It's very sad to listen to, but there's still, it's embedded, and I don't think there's a way to unembed it if you're going to go through the NHS or any, I suppose, mainstream healthcare system, for lack of a better term. There's no way to take out that the allopathic evidence-based protocol following model.
No, we can't get out of it in the UK. You know, the minute that you walk through an allopathic, I call an allopathic doctor, a medical physician, the minute you walk through the door, you're trapped. You can't, I mean, not physically trapped, but if, especially with a child, you know, once you have alerted a medical practitioner to an issue, there is no other choice in this country, even of a different health service, because we only have the NHS. And, you know, for me, learning about, and I'm such a novice. I mean, it's a completely new world to me, herbal medicine. And I think it's really important that we say that people should always consult a qualified medical herbal practitioner, because the herbs and herbal medicine can react with synthetic medicines that maybe you're already taking. And each herbal practitioner will treat that patient completely uniquely. You know, it's not a case of going into your doctor and being in there for 5 minutes and then coming out with a prescription for something and then going in again maybe 2 weeks later for 5 minutes and coming out with another prescription. A herbal medicine practitioner will go to great lengths to find out about what you've been, what drugs you've been on, what your lifestyle is, how you sleep, what your diet's like. I mean, it's a truly wraparound holistic approach. So one shouldn't, I mean, I was being told, you know, how amazing dandelions were. But then the caveat immediately was, oh, but don't do anything with a dandelion if you don't know what you're doing, because each part of the dandelion, whether it be the petal, the stem, the leaf, they all work differently and they can interact with other herbal preparations and they can interact with synthetic medicine. So it's really important that people do their research and go and see somebody qualified with, you know, that's properly qualified, and because they are regulated, you know, complementary medicines, as they're known, are regulated and over here by the MHRA just the same. So, but for me, it's a beautiful new world. And when I was asking about, you know, is there anything that herbal medicine can't do? You know, you've got herbal medicine first aid, you've got herbal medicine painkillers, you've got herbal medicine that will help with diabetes, reversing diabetes. There's nothing really that herbs and roots and plants won't heal. And what I did learn, which was really interesting, was that many herbal practitioners take their herbs with them when they travel, when they go away. And Jane told me that for her, her herbs didn't work in different countries, and it was because of the environment. So if she used the herbs from that particular country, it worked. So it's a truly amazing world. And, you know, when we look back at natural alternatives, we have an amazing gentleman here, David Noakes, who many people who listen and watch the UK column will know about. David Noakes was using GCMAF, which is, and I'll read out what it is. It's short for glycoprotein macrophage activating factor. And it's a complex protein molecule, and it's naturally produced in healthy humans. And he was using this to treat patients with terminal stage cancer very, very successfully, until the MHRA jumped on him like you wouldn't believe, because he was having such great success. And they not only sent him to jail and emptied his bank account, which all of his, everything went into the MHRA's bank account, because the criminal enforcement officers, that's what they do. They take the spoils of who they call criminals. But he was also double jeopardy, jailed in France as well for using GCMAF with medical supervision, I might add. And Lynn Thayer, the pair of them were jailed. And interestingly, I find that GCMAF has been trialed for COVID and is seen to be very successful. So if anybody wants to look at the paper, I mean, I was absolutely fascinated, and we did manage to get the paper to David to show him because of the sheer irony. But the paper's called Potential Role of GCMAF. That's G with a little C and then capital MAF in suppressing the severity of COVID-19 induced immune responses, lessons learned from HIV. So a very interesting paper. And once again, we see an alternative medicine and an alternative therapy that's been completely thrown away for one thing. When it's convenient, it's suddenly picked up again, and then all of a sudden it's okay. For me personally, I'm definitely going down the herbal route now, and I don't intend to look at allopathic medicines. And I was speaking to Hedley Reese, and I know you've spoken to Hedley Reese. who's a world expert in pharmaceutical distribution and manufacturing. And he said to me, oh, yeah, but, you know, you can't just go over to herbal medicine and forget allopathic medicine altogether because, you know, what if you're diabetic? What if you need surgery? What if? And I said, actually, do you know what? It got me thinking because I thought, I don't want to go back to allopathic medicine because even the allopathic medicine that we've been used to for all of these years as we've been growing up, that's going because it's being replaced by biological medicines. Today, there was even an announcement of a new antibiotic coming down the line from GlaxoSmithKline. And when I started to look at it, I can't even pronounce it. When I started to look at it, I thought, this looks really nasty. You know, this isn't your good old-fashioned penicillin or amoxicillin, things that belts and braces, medicines that you know about. This is like really kind of like big stuff that they're now promoting as the new antibiotic. So for me, and Jane did also say, you know, when you start talking about herbal medicine, although all of this is traditional medicine, Chinese herbal medicine is different from Western, if you like, herbal medicine. They do, they operate similarly, but it is slightly different. So this was an amazing new world that I've been introduced to, which I feel incredibly honored to be shown into it because, you know, we never knew it was there. And this is where it's so sad that we don't have the choice because everybody should have a choice. The NHS, there's a hospital in, it's called Whipps Cross Hospital, and they've actually fused together with herbal medical practitioners in one tiny little team. And it's working really, really well. But of course, it's working too well for it to be rolled out nationally. But that's what we need. We need two health services. We need a, you know, if people want to seek an allopathic route, then that's fine. And we need an alternative herbal route as well so that people have the choice because currently no one seems to have a choice in anything, least of all an informed choice.
Absolutely. So much you said there is important and there's so much we could break down. I think one of the most important aspects of what you're discussing is the individualization of the treatment, which is something that the allopathic model has completely done away with. And I would argue that it was ushered into being and ushered into prominence not solely for that reason, but that's one of the main reasons to do away with the individualization and put everybody on the same level, sort of like an automated process. Like we're automatons, we're all the same. There's no differentiation between any of this. And I think the most recent manifestation of this is the One Health approach. So that is one of many reasons why we should be afraid. Well, not afraid, that we shouldn't have any fear, why we should be opposed to the One Health approach, because it's not just placing all of humanity on one level and saying you're all the same, you're all going to be treated the same. It's placing all of natural life on one level, and all of natural life is going to be treated the same based on pseudoscience, based on allopathic medicine. And I can't help but see the overlap between the targeting of all of life on Earth through the One Health model and the targeting of all of life on Earth through ESG and sustainable development goals, and how that is a vehicle to financialize all of nature and turn carbon into a commodity. There's the overlap there is so obvious. I don't in any way think that it's coincidental. This is these are mechanisms to control all of life on Earth, both in terms of health, in terms of financial and monetary policy. It is global governance writ large.
100%. It's also to remove our identity. You know, this is to take away who we are, because it's never, ever been on anything that one size fits all. You know, it's impossible. We are all uniquely different. Nobody is the same. And of course, what they want to do, or what they appear to want to do, is to modify us, to take us, to augment us, to join us with machinery, to make us all the same. So they want to engineer our genomic makeup. They want to engineer our DNA to make us all the same. We'll extract that, or we'll add this. We'll extract A, B, and C, but we'll take away bits that we don't want, or bits that we don't like, or bits that will cause a lot of money to be spent. So take away disabilities, take away bad diseases, make everybody the same. We're entering the world of modification. We're entering the world of transhumans too, because they want to make everybody the same. And this one health, one size fits all, is exactly what we don't need. Nobody needs a one health, because one health doesn't exist. You know, there's 8 billion people on this planet. There's 8 billion health, not one. Trying to make us all the same is, number one, it's impossible. Number two, it's immoral. Number three, it's wicked. And in my opinion, it's evil, the whole plan to take us into this post-human era, into transhumans. But clearly, they just want to modify us with machinery. And we've talked about them before, medical devices and implants, and make us all superhuman. But for how long? You know, for how long are we transhumans too, before somebody comes up with a bright idea to update you to transhuman three? And we've talked about this before. There's no end to it. Once you start playing God, which is what they're doing, and once you start offering one health, one religion, this is control. This is everybody has to do the same, think the same, be the same, and none of us own anything. But that, I mean, that phrase on its own with the WEF is, I think, very telling, because it says you will own nothing. Well, it doesn't say we will own nothing. It says you will own nothing. So of course they'll have everything, including control, and we will have nothing. So I can see this whole one world, one religion, and removing of all borders, becoming a global community. I think the WEF call it the global village community, is clearly what we're seeing unraveling. And it's a scary sight to behold. I honestly see this year, later in the year, perhaps, there's going to be so much going on. I see kind of like a Mad Max possibility of an environment around us, because people are going to be so confused, so anxious. And by that time, if they're going to be reboosted and boosted, because even though they're saying they're standing down on COVID, especially here in the UK, oh, we're not going to be offering any more boosters, like they're doing us a favor, like we're getting a free gift. So everybody thinks it's done and dusted. But then all of a sudden, the next announcement comes out with, oh, actually, we're going to be offering boosters in the spring and the autumn for vulnerable, frail, immunosuppressed, et cetera, children. So the agenda still goes on. And as this one health pushes on, it becomes a one death. You know, one health is not really one health. It's one death, in my honest opinion.
Yes, it's a global death cult. That's how I see it.
Yeah.
And going back to the news that the non-emergency is going to be ended in May here in the US. In one sense, it doesn't matter, because in a lot of senses it doesn't matter, but in this particular sense I'm referring to, it's because the agenda has been embedded within non-governmental, although I would say government affiliated to some extent, entities who are going to continue pushing the agenda. And as an example of this, FiercePharma.com published an article on the 31st of January. Black Health, which is, it bills itself as a nonprofit, launches Get Me Vaxxed campaign aimed at boosting COVID shot uptake for Black children. And what this is all about is that this New York-based nonprofit, Black Health, is running a new campaign for Black History Month in February. The Get Me Vaxxed push is specifically aiming to boost COVID-19 vaccination rates among Black children in the U.S. from ages 6 months to 5 years old. And this is in service of so-called vaccine equity, and because the uptake among Black communities, especially in inner cities, has been so low, because they want nothing to do with this injection, not because there's not access to it. In New York, you can walk up to locations without an appointment and get shot up with this poison if you want to. So it's not a lack of access. And I ask myself, okay, who is this organization and why are they pushing this? And so I go to their website, which is nblch.org, because Black Health is part of the National Black Leadership Commission on Health, hence nblch.org. And their partners are the CDC, Novo Nordisk, the New York State Department of Health and AIDS Institute, Gilead, maker of remdesivir, the Robin Hood Foundation, and I believe I said Novo Nordisk, correct? And yeah. The New York Community Trust, the New York City Council. And then if you go to the Robin Hood Foundation, you can see that this is the financing mechanism in large part for this entity. And if you look at the board of directors of the Robin Hood Foundation, it is a who's who of globalists, I would say. Jacqueline Bezos is on here, Jeff Bezos's mother. Larry Fink of BlackRock is on here. You have people from Blackstone, people from Goldman Sachs, people from all sorts of capital management and hedge funds. You have, it's an amazing list. You have people in media like Tom Brokaw, Diane Sawyer, Brian Williams, Gwyneth Paltrow, the actress, is on the emeritus board, along with Lloyd Blankfein, senior chairman.
And Harvey Weinstein, I think, too. Harvey Weinstein, I think, was involved in this back in, I think it was 2006. That says it all, really, doesn't it?
Yes. And so what you have here, in my estimation, is that you have these globalist players in finance largely backing this Black Health agenda, which is seeking to increase, without pulling any punches, the maiming and murdering of more Black children in the US through these injections. It's sickening that this is still going, but the overall point being that none of this relies really on the government. There is the CDC affiliation, but you can take that out, and this is a huge vehicle all on its own. The funding is there, the partnerships with big biotech are there, with Gilead and Novo Nordisk. You have local government affiliation through New York City. It's a public-private partnership, without a doubt, and it's targeting children with these poisons. It's the height of evil, I would say, and it doesn't require an emergency to be in place anymore because this has become so cemented in people's psyches. So I wanted to point that out before we came up to time, and we are up to time. But Debbie, thank you for once again joining me and sharing your insights. I always appreciate them. And as always, I look forward to doing it again next week.
Thank you so much, Jesse, for inviting me. As always, it's a pleasure. And to everyone listening, just be prepared. Don't be scared. Good night and God bless.